Good morning, everybody. My name is Tim Porter. I'm one of the pastors here at Faith Community. Thank you for being here this morning. We exist as a church to do everything that we can to help everyone meet, know, and follow Jesus. So I'm extremely encouraged this morning that you made it a priority to be here this morning, because what we're doing here today with singing and learning from the scriptures and praying together, that is crucial for learning how to follow Jesus together. So thank you for being here this morning and encouraging my heart. I'm about to teach for about 30 minutes or so, 33 to be exact, if I'm on today. And I just want to let you know that if you're new here, or if I say anything to you today that just seems odd, or just you have questions about it, I'll make myself available right after the service. You can come up and ask me any questions. And then, as well, if you have if you'd like to say yes to following Jesus today, I'll be up here as well. You can come to the Connection Center too, and we'd love to help you in following after Jesus. We're in the middle of a series that we call Anchored, and just a few more weeks left in this series. And if you've not watched any of the other, or if you weren't here for any of the other series or sermons in that time, you can watch them on our website, fcchudson.com. Highly recommend checking them out, because this series is pretty important for us, because we are, as a culture, going through a time that we have not experienced since the Industrial Revolution, a time of change, rapid change. And with the rapid change comes a sense of pressure that hasn't been experienced in our culture for a really long time, a sense of angst, a sense of an experience of fear and anxiety. And today we want to look at how to be anchored in the midst of fearful and anxious times. The beginning of this month, Hudson High School hosted a movie called Angst. And that movie is designed to try to get a conversation going with parents and students and communities about the level of anxiety that students feel today, because a lot of people aren't talking about it. Just a few months ago, the Washington Post published an article, "Why Kids and Teens May Face Far More Anxiety These Days," writes, "There's definitely a rise in the identification of kids with serious anxiety. They're growing up in an environment of volatility, where schools have lockdowns, where there are wars across borders. We used to have high confidence in our environment. Now we have an environment that anticipates catastrophe. Because of the rise of anxiety and fear in our culture right now," one article started this way, "if you're feeling stressed, uncertain about what the future holds, or even physically unsafe, try not to panic. You're not alone." And I do want to begin today by saying, if you do experience anxiety and if you do battle with fear, you're not alone. Those of you who've been around here for some time have heard some of my stories. There's been seasons of my life where I'd battled with fear and anxiety, where I felt anxious and fear all day. The only time I didn't feel fear and anxiety was when I was sleeping, if I could get to sleep. Sometimes those seasons would last more than 6 months at a time. I can still go through days where I wake up and the first emotion, the first thing I fear in the morning is anxiety, and it stays with me all day. I can still be plunged at times into fear, somewhat humorously at times, and other times very seriously. Just a couple weeks ago, I was just plunged into another bout of fear for at least an overnight period, at least 24 hours. My father-in-law does our taxes. He's a lawyer and he's a tax preparer, and so he's done our taxes ever since that we were married. And so I sent all the paperwork to him, and he was doing them for us. And so I sent him an email just to sort of get a feel for, hey, where are we at? You know, am I going to owe anything this year? Am I getting anything back? You know, I've set money aside just in case we owed things, because in the past we've just been blindsided by some fees and some taxes that we weren't anticipating. So I set some money aside, and I just wanted to get a sort of a feel for, hey, where are things at? And my father-in-law says this. He writes this back in the email. "You should get the paperwork in the mail in the next couple days. I don't want to tell you the numbers over email. I don't like to see grown men cry." Now, my father-in-law can sometimes joke around, but my father-in-law can sometimes be deadly serious, and I didn't know which one that was. Are you saying you don't like to see grown men cry because I'm going to be getting back thousands and thousands of dollars and you're just kidding around? Or are you saying you don't want to see grown men cry because you've seen what I owe and you don't want to tell me over email? That night, I did not sleep well. Seriously, I did not sleep well at all. In fact, the next morning, my wife's like, hey, did you sleep well last night? Like, no. No. Well, why not? I'm like, oh, because of this. This is what your father-in-law sent me, or this is what your dad sent me. Come on. So I can be plunged. Now, I don't know. Tim had already mentioned that. We know that there's families here at Faith Community that this has been a really hard last couple weeks. And so I'm excited to go through this passage because Jesus has some things for us about how to be anchored and rooted in the midst of fear, in the midst of anxiety. See, often there's this disconnect between what we celebrate here today and the low-grade anxiety we feel throughout the day, or the panic that we feel and experience when the unimaginable happens in our lives. And what we want to try to do, and what Jesus is hoping to do, is to connect the things that we celebrate here today with everyday life so that we're anchored in Him in the midst of the unimaginable happening, to speak to anxious hearts. That's what Jesus is doing to do. That's what He can do. And so today we're looking at Mark 4, verses 35 through 41. It's on page 839, and the Bible's in front of you. If you don't have your own Bible, you can read along, and that'll be on the screens as well. And just a little setup about this. It's Mark 4, 35 through 41. And the book of Mark is it's like a biography of Jesus. It's not biography isn't the best word, but it's not all that the Gospel of Mark is, but it's probably one of the best ways that we can talk about what the Gospel of Mark is. It's a biography of Jesus. Mark, the author, was a follower of Jesus. Sort of a second generation follower of Jesus, and he knew some of the eyewitnesses. He knew Peter, he knew James, he knew John, he knew some of the people that were with Jesus throughout his life, and so he compiled those stories, and we have eyewitness accounts of Jesus and what he did and what he taught. And this is an eyewitness account of what Jesus did in a boat. Most likely, Mark got this from Peter, who was there. And the context of this is Jesus has been teaching all day. One of the ways in which he taught was the people would sit on the shoreline of the Sea of Galilee, and then he'd get out on the boat just a little bit away from the shoreline, and then he would teach on the water. And basically, it was a way of projecting and teaching large crowds along the sea. And you know what it's like to be out on the water, you know, the sun beating down all day. And so Jesus is tired, and he falls asleep. And we pick up this story here. Verse 35, on that day when evening had come, he, that is Jesus, said to them, let's go across to the other side. And leaving the crowd, they took him with them in the boat just as he was. And the other boats were with them. And a great windstorm arose and the waves were breaking into the boat so that the boat was already filling. But he, Jesus, was in the stern asleep on a cushion. And they woke him and they said to him, teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? And he awoke and he rebuked the wind and he said to the sea, peace, be still. And the wind ceased and there was a great calm. And he said to them, why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith? And they were filled with great fear and said to one another, who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? This is the word of the Lord. And thanks be to God. Now, a storm in the sea is a perfect place to teach about anchoring your heart, because a storm in the sea, no one can control. You're out of control. I mean, who can calm the winds and who can calm the waters? You're just going to ride them and try to survive the waves. And storms and seas in Scripture describe our metaphors for being out of control and for things that are chaotic that we experience in life. And Jesus is using this storm to teach his disciples about being anchored in him, in his goodness, and in his control. So I'm going to start first with a storm. The Sea of Galilee, even today, is known for its storms. There's cold air that comes in from the mountains, and that meets rising warm air from the sea, and it creates impressive storms on the water. And just like today, the ancient local fishermen were used to these storms. I mean, they were commonplace. They happened all the time. It's like a storm coming across Denver, Colorado, from the mountains at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You could just count on them. But this storm was different. This was a great storm. It's almost like a mini hurricane that showed up on the Sea of Galilee. And the storm is not lightening up. And I just want you to imagine yourself in the boat for a little bit. The boat is probably, it's about 26 and a half feet. It's probably about as long as a stage is. It's about 7 feet wide. The sides are about 3 feet high. There's places for four people to be rowing. And the boat can hold about 15 people. And there's a storm in the water. And the storm is not giving up. And so you're going up and down the waves. And maybe you're rowing next to Peter. And you're rowing hard. And you're trying to, you know, just get direction in this thing, in this storm. And you're rowing. And maybe you're rowing really hard. And Peter's barking orders because he's an experienced fisherman. You've got at least four of them on the boat. Peter, Andrew, James, and John, all experienced fishermen. Telling you what to do. And you have this thought. I wonder what Jesus is doing. See Peter, see Andrew, see these other guys. I wonder what Jesus is doing. So you're rowing and you look around, you maybe yell to Peter, Peter, hey, have you seen Jesus? What's Jesus doing? Is he behind me? I don't see him in front of me. Is he behind me as I'm rowing? And you turn around and he's asleep. The text says something so funny. He's asleep on the cushion. This is one of the reasons why you can know that these accounts aren't legends, because you don't put details like this in a legend. No doubt Peter remembers exactly. Oh yeah, we looked over there and guess what? Jesus was asleep on a cushion. Jesus is asleep in the storm. Now, no doubt, Jesus is physically tired. He has been on the water all day teaching. The sun is beating down. You know what it's like to be on the water for a day? You get tired, you're hungry. Jesus, no doubt, is sleeping. He falls asleep before the storm starts. But no one sleeps through a storm like this. How strange, how amazing, how odd for Jesus to be sleeping in the midst of the storm. Why? He's trying to teach them something. But this sleeping in the midst of the storm is not the only odd thing that Jesus does in this whole account. He also asks them a very strange and odd question. After everything calms down, after Jesus calms everything down, he asks this question: why are you so afraid? What? Why would you ask that question, Jesus? I mean, think about that. We were in a storm. There was water coming over the edges. Peter, James, and John, and Andrew, they were all freaking out, and they're experienced fishermen. And you're asking me, you're asking us, why were we afraid? Come on, look around you. We were out of control. We were going to die. Now, I'm an introvert by nature, and so I'm thinking, like, how in the world would I answer that question if Jesus were to ask me in the boat? How would you answer it? Now, because I'm an introvert, I probably wouldn't say anything out loud to give myself away. I'd just process on the inside. And I'd be thinking this, no doubt. I'd be thinking this, depending on how hungry I was, depending on what the day was like, and how snarky I was feeling. I'd be like, Jesus, what kind of question is that? Why was I afraid? What do you mean, why was I afraid? I mean, I would have a bite to it when I'm answering him. Why does Jesus ask them this question, why are you so afraid? With an obvious answer. Because one thing about the obvious is that the obvious is not always so obvious. And Jesus is trying to get at something about their fear. See, Jesus wants them to question their fear, and Jesus wants you and me to question our fear, to question our anxiety. Why are we so afraid? Why are we so anxious? Why are you so anxious? Why are you so afraid? Why? Question your fear. You see, fear is an interpretation. Did you know that? Fear and anxiety is an interpretation. One counselor talks this way about fear and anxiety. This is the equation: situation plus self plus God equals fear. Now, there's a good type of fear that moves you. It's that thing that you feel when someone you love was just in a car accident and you're there to help and it moves you to get down there and to help. That's good. That's good fear response. You're afraid for them and what's going on in them. But this can go haywire in us. And we can constantly be interpreting, we are constantly interpreting life through this lens, through this equation. I look at the size of the situation. I look at my ability or inability to meet the size of the situation, and I add to it, everybody adds to it, who I think God is and what he's doing. And as I put those three together, I'm either going to experience hope and courage or I'm going to experience fear in life. And Jesus wants to draw out and to challenge our interpretations, particularly of who he is and what he's up to in the midst of situations that are way beyond our control. Jesus shows this with this question, this follow-up question. Why are you so afraid? He asks the next question. Have you still no faith? Now, the disciples have faith in Jesus. So Jesus is not saying that you've completely disbelieved in me, that you're apostate, you're a heretic, you've just abandoned me, you're an atheist. He's not saying that at all. They believe in him. But what he's trying to get at is that you still don't understand, disciples. You don't understand who you're dealing with here. You don't understand who's in the boat with you. I've got more to teach you about who I am. If they knew who called them, if they knew who called them, they wouldn't be afraid in the storm. If they only knew who they were following, who they belonged to, Jesus is trying to get at, you wouldn't be afraid in the storm. If he only knew what Jesus knew, they would have paid attention to Jesus sleeping. And instead of going, what are you doing sleeping? They would have started questioning themselves. Why are we busy panicking? That's what Jesus is trying to get across. If we knew who called us, if we knew who we said yes to, if we knew who was in the storm with us, what should that do with our worries, with our concerns, with our what-if-isms, with our panic? If we knew who Jesus was, we'd be anchored. Now, the disciples, again, they know Jesus, but Jesus is going to show them more about who he is so that they can be anchored. Jesus wants to deal with that add end part of the equation, the God add end. Who do you think I am, and what do you think I'm up to in your life? Consider the question that the disciples ask Jesus when he's sleeping and they're trying to wake him up. Verse 38, do you not care that we are perishing? Do you not care that we are perishing? It's an obvious question, but behind that question, quite frankly, is a belief. It's a premise, and it's this. Jesus, if you loved us, you wouldn't let us go through this storm. And so because you're letting us go through the storm, you must not care about me. You wouldn't let this happen to me. I don't know about you, but I've said almost those exact same words to Jesus. Jesus, if you cared about me, you would not be letting me go through this right now. You would not be allowing me to go through this at all right now if you cared about me. Because care means that you would keep this from happening to me in my life. But Jesus is showing them, of course he allows the people he cares about to go through storms. That's a false premise. Of course he does that. His love and his care is not absent when the storm is present, but he's present in the midst of the storm with us. Jesus, if you say yes to Jesus, Jesus will lead you into all kinds of circumstances and places that are way beyond your control. Why? Because he wants you anchored in something greater than your own strength. He wants you anchored in his goodness, in his control. He wants to draw out any kind of unbelief that we might have about him so that we're anchored in truth about who he is. It's one of the reasons for storms in our lives. So we can see him more clearly, we can trust in his control more dearly and deeply. We can be anchored in him. So if you don't do this, I highly recommend it. Listen to your anxieties. Listen to your fears. What are they saying about what you believe about who Jesus is and what he is or should be doing? Your fears speak. And if you're in a spot where you are in way over your head, where you know that your abilities and your strengths cannot overcome, and you're maybe questioning, Jesus, if you cared, I would not be in this. Please, please start to see Jesus has you exactly where he wants you. Because he's going to show you some of the things about himself that that anything other than a storm can't show you. Now, in the coming weeks, since spring has sprung, in the coming weeks, you and I are going to be experiencing some wonderful, humid, hot weather. And we're going to be experiencing some thunderstorms. And it's going to be glorious. Wind is going to be whipping around, and there's going to be darkness and lightning, and the rain is going to hurt your face when you're walking into it, and sirens are going to be blaring. The wind is going to be pounding. It's going to be this massive unleash of power into the atmosphere. Now, some of us in the room are going to be basement dwellers. You know who you are. As soon as the sirens come up or the warnings come up, you're downstairs. You're getting a place to go in the basement where everybody can be safe and protected. Others of us are going to be like me, knuckleheads. We're going to be out on the porch watching this whole thing happen. Like, oh, I'm not going to get hurt. No way. That chair is not going to fly by and hit me. No way. And you're just going to watch this beautiful, massive display of power go by your house. But nobody's going to do what Jesus does in the midst of this storm. He stands out, as it were, on the porch, this big, huge, significant, unimaginable display of power. And like a dad to a troubled young child, he speaks to it. Be quiet. Shh. Peace. Just calm down. Just calm down. Now, we would all sit there and go, this is crazy. Jesus, what are you doing in the boat? You're talking to a storm? Who do you think you are? Until we see what happens, it actually listens to him. It actually listens to him. Now, I've prayed in the midst of storms for God to keep me safe. I've worshiped in the midst of storms because, my God, this is powerful. If this is powerful, what must you be like? But I've never been deluded enough to think that I could speak to it and it's going to obey me. But that's exactly what Jesus does. He speaks to it, and it's quiet. The wind ceased, verse 37, and there was great calm. This dramatic reversal takes place. At one point in time, a squall on the sea. Now, once Jesus speaks to it, he just speaks to it. It's a water skier's dream. Calm breeze, if any. The water's like glass. What must that have been like? At one moment, you were feeling dread of fear that you were going to perish, and now everything's calm. Everything's absolutely calm. What just happened? How did he do that? Who is this Jesus? And it's so fascinating what Mark says. The disciples went from a dread of fear to an awe of fear. Who is this Jesus? It starts to settle on them. It starts to land on them that they had totally underestimated who this Jesus is. They're in the boat with someone who can calm storms. They may be out of control, but they follow a Jesus for whom nothing is out of his control. Now, maybe you're here today and you've watched a couple YouTube videos or read a couple books by people arguing that Jesus never claimed to be God. Now, that's partly true. Jesus never uttered the sentence, as far as I know, never uttered the sentence, I'm God, follow me. He never did that. But he said sentences similar, before Abraham was, I am. But here, he doesn't make a statement, a verbal statement about being God. He makes a physical statement about being God, because nobody can calm storms except for Jesus himself. What he's trying to teach his disciples is that God is in the boat with you. Why are you so afraid? Why are you so afraid? God is in the boat with you. And Jesus moves them from the dread of fear to the awe-filled fear. Verse 41, they were filled with great fear. When you say yes to following Jesus, you're not just simply saying yes to follow somebody who's a good teacher, not yes to somebody who's simply a healer, not yes to someone who's prophetic. You're not saying yes to simply a human being. You're saying yes to someone who is God, who's the very power of God come to be with us. And that should connect to our daily life in such a way that you belong to the God of the universe, for whom nothing is under control, not under control. And one of the reasons we see here that God allows us to weather storms is so that we can be anchored in his power and control. So that we can be anchored in his goodness. That our interpretation of him, who he is, and what he's up to in the midst of unimaginable things changes. We get a bigger view of Jesus. We get more of Jesus. What can calm our day-to-day fears, what can calm our day-to-day anxieties, is a clearer, truer view of Jesus and our relationship with him. Jesus casts out fear by creating fear. They're in the boat with God. It's because of this and what Jesus does here and through the experience of other people who've walked with Jesus year in and year out that one pastor named Charles Spurgeon wrote this. He said, I've learned to kiss the waves that throw me against the rock of ages. Because of the storm, I now see a bigger, truer, grander, more glorious, more personal, more caring Jesus than I would have had I not been in the midst of the storm. A couple weeks ago, I posted on Facebook one of my favorite verses, Isaiah 26:3. It reads, you keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you because he trusts in you. And an old friend going back all the way to third grade, her name is Brenda. Old friend going all the way back to third grade posted on that or commented on that post and just said, thank you so much. And she then messaged me. And this is what she said. Give me a little context. She said, I just found out that I have a very rare sinus cancer. And God used that verse to touch my heart in a very deep and personal way. I told her that DJ, my wife, and I would be praying for her and asked specifically what we could be praying for along with the healing and recovery. And she replied, I am overwhelmed with a true sense of God's peace. It's a beautiful thing. I just met with the oncologist today and I'm encouraged. The doctor is one of the few in the country who treats this special kind of cancer, and he's just down the road from us at University of North Carolina, parentheses, go Tar Heels. That was before Friday night. God has us, she says, God has us exactly right where we need to be. Would you pray this? Would you pray that I would become closer to God in the midst of this, and that I would point others to him and his goodness. In the midst of fearful times, the one thing we can always bank on, the one thing that can begin to calm our hearts, is that in the midst of fearful times, we can get more of Jesus. A bigger, truer, more powerful view of him and a stronger relationship with him that anchors us in the midst of everything. Now, maybe you're thinking right now, okay, You know, if I was in the boat with the disciples and I saw that take place, I could be anchored as well. But right now, I'm in the midst of the storm and I don't know how this thing's going to shake out. I might drown. Or I've seen other Christians that go through storms and Jesus didn't quiet them. They drowned. How in the world am I going to be anchored in the goodness of Jesus when I've not experienced what the disciples did? That's a great question. That's an awesome question. It's a question we all should be asking, I think, quite frankly. That's a question I've asked as well. It's like, it'd be great to be back in the boat to experience that kind of stuff. But let me answer that question with a question. Actually, it's a question here. I want to relook at the question that the disciples asked in this story, in this event. Remember how the disciples asked Jesus this question when he's sleeping? Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? Now, you and I know more about Jesus than what the disciples, we can know more about Jesus than what the disciples knew at this moment, because we know the end of his story. And in knowing the end of his story, notice how ironic this question is. Jesus, do you not care that we are perishing? Did you hear the irony? It took me a while to hear it. Do you not care that we are perishing? Why is that question ironic? Because the whole reason Jesus is in the boat is because he cares that we're perishing. The whole reason God took on human flesh that we celebrate at Christmas, and becoming human form and becoming human and becoming Jesus, is because he cares that we are perishing. Of course he cares that we're perishing. That's why he came. He cares so much about our perishing that Jesus came to live for us and die for us and to rise again for us. And Jesus is sleeping in the boat not simply because he's tired. Jesus is sleeping in the boat not simply because he knows that he's in control. Jesus is also in the boat because he knows that today, this day, he's not going to die. Because his mission is to die a different day. A different day. Jesus is going to perish in a much bigger storm. A much greater storm. That if Jesus didn't perish in that storm, all of us would perish. See, in the Bible, storms not only talk about chaos and things that we can't control, storms often represent God's judgment on human sin. Maybe you've heard the story of Noah and the 40 days of rain. It was a storm, God's judgment. Maybe you've heard the story of a man named Jonah who ran away from the mission that God gave to him to go and proclaim to Ninevites that judgment was coming so that they would be saved. Jonah runs away, and what does God do as he's on a boat? He sends a storm because Jonah's under judgment. And Jesus is asleep in this storm because he knows he's going to hurl himself into a greater storm. The storm of perishing in the midst of God's judgment. Not that he deserves, not that he earned, but that you and I earned. We perish not because of storms. We perish before God not because of storms, but we perish because you and I have in our hearts this question, do you not care, God? And that question gives birth to all of our rebellion and to all of our sin. Do you remember the question, how Eve was tempted by Satan in the garden? Just one question. Did God really say that you shouldn't eat from the tree of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil? Did God really say? That moment, suspicion of God's goodness invaded the woman's heart. And it's been there in every human heart since, except for Jesus. And he died and he perished to pay for all of our sins that's birthed out of this doubt, this suspicion of God's goodness. How do we know? How do we know that God will calm the storm, that Jesus can be trusted in the midst of the storm? How do we know? He's already calmed the greatest storm that you and I ever had to face so that we don't have to face it again. The judgment has been swallowed up. out of great love for us. He cares that we perish. And so he did what was absolutely necessary to do it. He gave his life for you and me. And if he cares so much to give his life for you and me, to cause that storm to grow quiet, the storm of God's judgment to grow quiet, we can trust him in the small storms that we go through and seek to know him more and seek to trust him more. And in the midst of fear, in the midst of anxiety, to say, Jesus, I don't know how this is all going to shake out. And I ask for a good end to what I'm going through right now. But regardless of all of that, Jesus, I ask that you would give me this, that you would give me more of you. And Jesus will always, always answer that prayer. And that's what anchors. So it gives us hope. Would you stand with me? I want to pray for us. Father, thank you for your goodness and your grace and your mercy. And God, I ask that you would anchor us in your Son, Jesus, who hurled himself into the storm of your judgment, of our sin, that it would be calm, there'd be peace between us, and that his love, his care, his goodness, his control, that it would anchor us. Amen.